Hey, it's Chaz and AJ.
Hello.
Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoy it. And please subscribe, comment, share, do all those things that make us look good.
And be nice.
Thank you. All right, let's talk about weed.
Yes.
That'll relax us all.
Yes.
Who gets to farm weed legally in Connecticut? Joe LaChance, the weed guy. Good morning.
Good morning. How's everybody there?
Good. What do we got here?
Well, what you got is the first 16, what they call social equity partnership licenses. So these are not lottery winners. These are people who have $3 million in investment. They're social equity applicants. So that means they come from the disproportionately affected areas, and they meet the income qualifications. Most of them have partners, obviously, that put up the $3 million. And one of the rules is that the social equity applicant has to own 65% of the company. So these are basically the people who skip the lottery.
Wait, they have to own 60%?
65, yeah.
Good.
The social equity applicant does.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. So they have the $3 million they had to put up.
You know what I thought this would be?
Was that?
Let's put you in for 5% so we can get a...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're from this area.
They prevented those kinds of deals.
Good.
But there's, there's loopholes and there's ways around everything. So these are the people, they're going to be the large-scale cultivators. So they're pretty smart because, you want the cultivator's license first. So these are going to be 15,000 square feet or more, all owned by social equity applicants.
Where will they be?
And
where will these farms be?
I will tell you.
Okay.
5 in Hartford, 2 in Waterbury, 3 in New Britain, 2 in Bridgeport, 1 in Middletown, 1 in Southington, and 1 in Stamford.
There's one near you.
How does Hartford get 5?
Yeah.
Yeah, Hartford gets 5. So these guys are going to now have to go through a second phase, which is what is called the provisional license.
All right, too complicated for me.
Yeah, that's where
they
pay the
actual $3
million.
Weed?
Yeah.
Yeah, they have to get background checked. They have to check out all their financing, and they pay $3 million for their license, which is a lot more
than just the license.
Yeah, but they'll make it back.
Yes. Just the license. That
not
$3
the equipment,
that
not
up.
The property, not the staff.
Employees, That one seat has gone in
Doritos.
$3 million, right?
$3 million. That's to skip the lottery, to get social equity applicants up and running first, and to get the large cultivation facilities up and running first, so when they do license the dispensaries, they'll have weed to sell. So that was the smartest thing they did, was license the growers first.
How do these socially equity people come up with $3 million? It's the 45% of the business
drug sales
that isn't socially whatever. I don't know.
It's right. So this is where, me and my crew are doing a little research, and you kind of got to find out who their investment partners are.
Yeah, you do. That should
you
be
know,
public.
And a lot of them are not from Connecticut.
Okay.
I can tell you that right now. And, a lot of them are big corporations. Who just want to get into the game here, and they'll
put the $3 million up, put them in 65%, just so they can have that 35%.
Right, right, right. So this is kind of the beginning.
So the 5 spots in Hartford, the 2 spots in Bridgeport, have they been picked out? Like, do we know exactly where they're going to be?
I do believe that part of it is you have to have a location.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you're growing that much weed, do you have to have armed security when you're growing that much weed?
I would think.
Yeah, you have to. There are certain security requirements, and I would think an armed person during open hours would be, and they probably got all kinds of cameras.
Because you got people now in Connecticut walking into banks.
Yeah.
Yeah, with huge amounts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huge amounts of cash.
So you're not going to be able to go to this farm and buy. These people are the people who distribute.
Yeah.
So they grow and then they distribute it to the
There's no farm stand.
Yeah,
you can't go in there and buy
a farm stand.
Price in the corner of the parking lot on Wednesday from 2 to 6.
We have four sticks of this. And
yeah. Right, clearance sale. Right. Here's all the stuff. No.
Exactly right.
They can't do that. So these are the guys who are going to be selling to the dispensaries.
Okay.
Gotcha.
I should know all this already. Where are the dispensaries? Are they open?
Well, no, they haven't licensed them yet.
God.
I would assume the first dispensaries are going to be the existing ones. They're just going to convert them. They have a conversion license, they call it. I would assume those will be the first, and then they're going to start licensing them out of the lottery.
Oh, my God. What decade can we walk into a place and just buy weed?
I'm saying by 2026.
You know, they try to tell you by the end of the year, okay? Uh-huh. But if you
it's
do
July.
The math, yeah, right. If you do the math and look at the way they're giving out the licenses, like month by month, like every month they're going to announce new ones, and they're doing them in stages, it's going to be next year sometime.
Yep. Yeah, I do understand
they still have
doing
to grow
it,
this weed.
Doing
they
it right,
to build their facilities.
Doing it right is better than doing it fast.
Yeah, they'll still screw it up.
They
though.
They just drag everything out.
They do. They really
yeah.
do.
And I am interested in those investors. I think you should look into that.
Yeah, who is it?
Donors. And,
right.
Because these people were handpicked by the government.
Yep.
The 16 that we're talking about.
Oh, you got a contract.
Yep.
Definitely, yes.
Yeah. Yep. And I'm sure their investors had a lot to do with it, like who their investors were. But I do, there's a list being compiled right now. I'm already looking at part of it. It's just not complete yet. But, yeah, we're looking into it. We're on it.
And you're thinking next year... We'll be able to, just
yeah,
a regular
they
person
say by the end of the year,
without
yeah,
a medical marijuana card can walk into one of these places and buy weed.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Will the prices be controlled by the government?
Will it be T-shirts?
No.
Yes.
Yes.
They're going to be adding a lot of different kinds. They have a weird taxation way that they do it.
Of course they do.
Yeah, of course. Yes.
No. Geez.
Really?
Here we go.
With this
go
T word, yes.
Tell us about that.
I can't wait till that comes out. I can't just wait.
Oh, we don't know what that is yet?
We know what it is, but I got to see what the numbers come out to. The way they have it calculated. I just got to see what it ends up to be like per ounce.
It is unbelievable to me that something that nature created.
Yep.
The government said, you can't have this for decades. And then they're like, you can have it. But you're going to have to pay us.
We're going to tax us.
And if you don't, we're going
to
put you in jail.
Right.
That'd be like, hey, I got this tree over here.
Yeah.
Okay?
Exactly. Yep.
I make boards out of it.
Yep.
Oh, well, this is how it's going to go, pal.
Got to tax those boards.
Just think of the money. That
it's absurd.
Is.
Yeah.
Oh, just think of what they're making just on licensing fees. 16 people paying $3 million right here.
That's the reason
$3 million. Right here, just for licensing, before they even collect a penny of tax. And then they already collected a bunch for the lottery.
Well, once they start taxing this, they're going to go around to these people who are growing weed here and there, and they're going to start busting them just to, like, shut these people down. Because there's a lot of people just growing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're going to allow you to grow next year, but, only six plants.
Right.
Oh, yeah. They're already cracking down on the... quote unquote, the black market.
Are they? I haven't read anything about that.
Well, these parties they were having, the gifting parties.
Yes.
Camden.
Yeah. And they just got another one up in Portland. So they're going after them because, they're not paying taxes.
Of course.
Yeah.
Now,
so
I'm talking about
happens.
The people who have little farms somewhere, more than six plants. And I'm not talking about like 15. I'm talking about they're going to find the ones with, because they're going to have to make
40,
some news stories
50.
To get everybody in line. Like, okay.
Get them all scared.
We're making money on this now, and you can't.
Yeah, put the fear of God in them. Yep.
Yep. No, they do that. You're right.
So when you buy weed, is it
going to
have that weird sticker on it? Like, when you buy a bottle of booze?
Right.
It's got that like.
A pack of cigarettes, yeah.
Yeah, it's got that thing.
Oh, it's going to have a whole sticker on it. It's going to tell you how much THC is in it. What test it passed. It'll have a whole big sticker on it.
How
much
do you think, I don't even know the measurements now, but let's just say an ounce seems like a lot of weed, but let's just say, what do you think an ounce in Connecticut will cost after it's, produced here, taxed here?
Let's say in the medical right now, it's $200. I would say legal would end up to be probably $250 to $300 an ounce.
Wow. No more dime
bags,
huh?
But they like to sell it in the smaller portion.
Oh, my God. I feel so old.
They like to sell eighths and quarters.
When I was a kid.
Because they make more money.
It was illegal, but an ounce was $20. And if you wanted really good weed, it was $40.
I do remember those.
$40.
And it came in a sandwich bag.
That's right.
And your friend handed it to you all crumpled up in a handshake.
Not an ounce.
Three
you couldn't fit that in your hand.
No. That was behind the building then, yes.
A three-finger lid or something like that?
Yeah.
You measured it by your finger.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember those
things. I haven't smoked in a long time.
Yep.
It's come a long way.
Yeah.
That weed is really potent now.
Yeah, I may need it again.
That ounce would last me, I don't know, a couple generations of my family.
I'm going to will you my weed.
I just need one hit per week.
Right.
Whoa.
There you go.
All right. Before I let you go, Joe.
Yeah.
How do pot plants like the summer we're having?
You got to watch it with because the heat can really damage the leaves. So you got to watch for sun damage. They do the humidity and the heat, but the sun can really damage the leaves. And you got to water the crap out of them.
Okay, keep them watered, yeah.
So that's why indoor growing is better. You can control the amount of sunlight.
Yeah, indoor is the way to go.
Yeah.
And to do it legally in Connecticut, you got to do it indoor.
Yep.
Yeah.
But people throw a few seeds in their garden.
Right. Otherwise, a deer eats it.
Would a deer get stoned off of a pot plant?
Wouldn't
eat it to begin with.
It explains why walking the traffic.
They do?
They are the enemy.
Really?
Deers are known to eat weed.
Oh,
yes, absolutely.
That's why they stop in traffic. He's like, wow, cool
lights. Is that the cops, man?
Right? Quick! I saw one had a joint hanging in his mouth.
It wasn't me. I didn't do it. All right.
Yeah.
All right, Joe, we're linked up to your stuff on the radio station website. Thank you, brother. A school shooting is a crime against all of us. It's a crime against humanity.
Yes.
The police response to that school shooting in Texas made us all wince. Avon Police doing something about that. Lieutenant John Schmalberger, Avon PD, on the phone now. Good morning, and thanks for what you do.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Morning.
It seems like we should have all been doing this, after Colorado, after Sandy Hook.
Yeah.
But you guys are doing it, and it's great that you're doing it. You're training for this?
Yeah, absolutely. We're very fortunate here in the town of Avon that we have a great working relationship with the school district, and the town really supports us in doing the training. Avon, we've actually did do something after Columbine, and we began going into the schools, coming up with different plans to prepare. So since then, every officer here, we go through this type of training, probably every other year or so, where we get this big sort of, active shooter, active response, training where, we split the PD in half and, spend all day, reviewing, sort of a, crawl, walk, run approach where we review situations, talk about it, talk it through. Walk it through, and then actually do some live sort of role-playing. We've been preparing for a while. These sort of things take a long time to plan. So, we began planning this, back in probably February when we had our yearly meeting with our training cadre.
I mean, the number one thing about the training is just letting everyone know we're not going to wait.
Yeah.
Those cops, according to the little bit that I saw, they got to their position quickly, and then they just waited. So that just has to be rule one, right? We're just going in.
Time is crucial, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so one of the things we want to do with our training is to really empower the officers. When you're first on scene, you are the incident commander, and you're the one there. You have the best and most accurate information. So you're getting there, and you're going to go in, you're going to react to the threat or the situation that is presented to you.
If you're the first there, you are incident commander throughout the rest of the operation or just until a superior shows up?
just until a superior shows up. So gotcha. If you arrive and you got a guy right behind you, you're grabbing your guy, and you're going in.
Okay.
So that's it. Job one is you arrive, you go in.
Yeah.
Yep. Job one is to eliminate the threat.
Good.
That's great, because it seemed like that's where
they went wrong.
It was really tough for me to watch that video, just thinking about.
Yeah.
I don't even want to go into it.
Yeah.
There were people still alive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then they weren't alive.
They could have saved them.
Of the time it took for them.
Yeah.
So job one, go right in, eliminate the threat.
Let
me ask you this, because I'm standing there watching and I'm thinking, man, if I'm a cop and my superior is saying, no, we're holding our position or we're waiting or whatever, I'm not going to listen.
Yeah,
I'm going in. Right. I'm like, sorry, man.
Right.
Fire me.
Yeah, see me later.
What happens to someone who does that? Because now you're breaking the chain of command, which is the most important thing in any kind of a paramilitary organization.
Right. I mean, you know, that's for a debrief later. That's for, you know, lessons learned. You know, if you're there, you have the best, and most accurate information. That's why we train. That's why we prepare, so that you can make those decisions with confidence. And if you see the situation that you can address and you can address that threat, then you take action. So there's really no, you know, repercussions if the, you know, supervisor's yelling on the radio, hey, you know, stop, 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 and you see the threat directly in front of you. Well,
yeah, you got to do what you got to do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah. And I don't want to harp on these people.
No.
But, you know, there was one in Florida, too, where we saw the person who was hired to protect the school, the resource officer, just hide the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. Very difficult to watch. You know, I think, you know, you never truly know how you're going to react until that situation presents itself. But that, again, is, you know, why I go back to the training. You know, we consistently, you know, consistently do it. We can try to consistently get a little bit better each day, so that hopefully over a period of time, we're able to see positive results.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So that's our philosophy here.
I think that with the mindset of most of the public now with police is we're trying to hire people who aren't that aggressive and who are like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But when they're faced with this situation, you want the aggressive people.
You need the aggressive people.
You need the aggressive people, because the timid people who want to talk through things, I'm sorry, it's just true.
It ain't going to happen.
They're not going in.
Yeah.
They're not.
Nope.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a place for everybody here at the PD. Everyone can fill a role. But certainly when it's time to act, that's certainly why, you know, we get paid. And that's what the expectation of the PD is. That's what the expectation of the community is for us to take action.
Yeah, this is why we have to give you all the respect. I mean, there are a few knuckleheads here and there, but that's with any profession anywhere.
We got some here.
well, there's four of us. What would you say the percentage is?
I would say 75 is good.
75 to 100. no, but we have to appreciate what you do every day, because when it comes time for this to walk in and say, I might not see my family again, but I'm going to do my best to stop what's happening here.
Yep.
That's what you're paid to do.
That's a very difficult thought process. And it's a thought process that you have to, as an officer, you have to have gone through before that situation. You can't be walking into that situation and having that conversation with yourself for the very first time.
Right.
You know, you have to really.
That's a good point. You
know, yep.
That can't be the first time you start thinking this one through.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, you know what? That's a great point, because that's probably what was happening in that hallway. Is they're all kind of like reflecting on, I don't know.
I was going for a good pension here.
It was tough to see like 8 or 9 of them with like blast shields and all this. And
Set up,
there's only one kid down the hall.
Yeah, it was tough. Five, you rush him.
Well, I'm, you know, after we did the story, we were like, hey, you know what? This has got to be, if you're a police chief, you walk in and say, guess what we're doing now?
Yep.
And I was glad to see Avon was the first news story of this nature.
Step up.
We're training.
Yep, we're doing it.
And you mentioned earlier that the school, you're lucky that your school system is supportive of this training. Are there school systems that aren't supportive of this training?
We don't want that. Yeah, no, come on.
I don't know that. I don't know, the intimate relationships between PDs and other school districts. I just know that here, the school has been great. Different breaks, we're allowed to, use the school for training. They're always very happy to see us. You know, we encourage the guys to go in. They encourage us to just walk through the school, say hello, and the guys do a nice job of getting in there when time allows.
That's great.
It's an important relationship.
You know, I respect everyone's opinion.
Yeah.
And you could be against guns and cops, but if your kid is in that classroom, you're going to want guns and cops.
Yes, you are.
On the right side.
Yes, you are.
Going in.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
We appreciate what you do. Thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Anytime. Lieutenant John Schmalberger, Avon PD. Sometimes movie critics get it wrong.
Get out.
99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox, Chaz and AJ in the morning. Here are the top five times they got it wrong.
Number one, I have American Beauty, which was a big hit in 1999. It made close to $400 million. It won the Oscar for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Script. Kevin Spacey won his second Oscar for it. I didn't like it at the time, and it seems like my thinking on it is becoming more usual. The reputation seems to have gone down over the years.
Is it in part because of what we know now about the lead actor?
I don't think so. I think 1999, a lot of people think, was one of the best recent years for Hollywood. You know, there were movies like Fight Club and Magnolia that didn't even get nominated. Office Space came out that year. There were being John Malkovich. And the thing about American Beauty, it was one of the first movies produced by that company that Spielberg, David Geffen, and Katzenberg put together,
is that
DreamWorks.
Right?
They took a chance on this offbeat script, sort of a satire of suburbia, and they gave it a Harvey Weinstein-like Oscar push, and it worked. It swept the awards.
Huh. All right, so you think that, so that's number one. What's number two?
That's number two, and I hesitate to say this because it's an unpopular opinion. Gone with the Wind has never really worked for me. I saw it
boring.
It's close to 4 hours long. My problem with it also centers on the fact that it focuses on a woman, Scarlett O'Hara, who to me is kind of a biatch, to be
unlikable.
Biatch and tramp.
And she doesn't see the light until the
is
last.
Is she a tramp?
Yeah, because she's like bouncing around from guy to guy.
No, oh, really?
Yeah, there was one guy, and then Rhett Butler and yada yada. Yeah,
she tries to bounce around.
Right, she tries. Well, that shows trampiness.
She loves the wrong man, and she
has tramp tendencies.
Their working title was Trampoline, but they made it Gone with the Wind.
And her name was Olene.
Right, Trampoline. Ha!
Fiddly-dee.
But, it's one of the biggest hits in the history of Hollywood. I have a cousin in Philadelphia who has watched it probably 100 times. It's her favorite movie. So I hope she doesn't hear about this,
I will tell her.
It has never been a movie I liked. In terms of classic Hollywood, give me something like Casablanca.
There's another movie where the woman is I don't know, man.
Yeah. She kind of screwed him over, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know if she was ever really in love with him or using him to get her and her real man out.
That's why he put her on the plane.
Get out of here.
I'm going to say, look, a nice guy, but really, I can't stand your ass. Yeah. Get the hell out of here.
No, it is a great movie.
And I guess I prefer Ingrid Bergman to Vivian Leigh, so that factors in, too. The chemistry between Bergman and Bogart in Casablanca is just intense.
Yeah, to say you're going to take up 4 hours of someone's time, it better be really good.
Yeah.
And she's fixated on saving that Tara house. It's really about real estate.
Equity,
largely.
Yep.
She just,
yep.
She just wants to save that house.
It's not that bad.
You know what's the best? When Carol Burnett did a spinoff on that one, her own version.
Yes, and she wore the,
and she wore the curtain rug.
She wore the drapes.
She took the drapes. Yeah,
yeah.
And she's like,
that's so great.
One of the best sketches ever on television,
and
for
then,
sure.
And then at the end, we go, Frank McDowell, give a damn. Hey, Harvey Korman's living like a fucking my dear, I don't give a, and she slams the door in his face.
Yeah.
And then the maid goes, what do you think? Frankly, my dear, I don't give a girl. I don't give a girl. What does that mean? I don't know. That was such a great spoof. I loved it. That was awesome.
That was fabulous.
Yes,
that movie came out in 1939. And
yeah.
It was like peak depression when nobody had anything.
Right.
So I think they made it that length on purpose.
Yeah,
so that
folks
people
occupied.
Could, yes. Spend one fee, go in, and like be entertained for hours and like,
oh,
have
wow.
somewhere to be
yeah.
where they're not just like
and
out on the road.
It has an intermission.
Never seen the movie.
It had an intermission,
what?
And it was based... Part Christ. Of it was based on a big bestseller by Margaret Mitchell, and I think they wanted to try to get as much of that on the screen as they could. People
wow.
loved the
yeah.
book, which came out a few years earlier.
We had to watch it for school. I was thinking to myself, you're not going to just drop out now. Seventh grade's good enough.
When you go, like, when you watch the movie, are there big chunks that could be taken out? Could
oh,
it
yeah.
be a two-hour movie?
They could chop it down
oh,
to 90 minutes,
course.
A good 90 minutes, yeah.
yeah.
I think so, yeah. Yep.
Easily.
Yeah. They explore every character, every relationship that character has with every other character on
yeah.
the screen.
Yeah. Gone with the Wind is your time, actually. Your time is Gone with the Wind.
Gone with the Wind.
Yep.
What else is on your list, Joe?
Number three, I have Avatar, which I thought
ugh.
Was impressive in 3D. And then when I tried to watch it on TV, I find it unwatchable
blech.
Without 3D. You know, and why they're making three
okay,
sequels
Phil.
Really puzzles me. There's one coming out at Christmas that I have zero interest in.
Avatar 2.
I never watched the movie. I just knew from the trailer that I would hate every second of it.
They're like action Smurfs,
just,
right?
It's just Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
All, or Pocahontas.
But
and
blue.
It's
but
not even
blue.
Particularly well acted. Like, even the actors,
no.
it's just like, what are we doing here?
Disagree.
No. How did that get
doing
so much good buzz and attention?
Well, it was the first big 3D movie in many years, and I got to tell you, if you saw it in 3D, the way Cameron used it was really impressive, and I think it was sort of like a flim-flam act where the technology just blew people away, but when you watched it later on TV, you realized the story was just
stupid.
Really thin.
Yeah,
stupid.
Sure.
Yeah.
I just hate 3D movies. I don't want to have to put anything in my face to watch a movie.
Sorry. I agree.
Yeah.
Just in your face.
On your face.
On your face.
Exactly, yeah.
I want popcorn.
Right. Yeah, in my face, yes. I want popcorn.
Nestle's
I want my milk duds. I want the yeah. jujubes that stay in your teeth like a week and a half. Yep. Stuff like that. Yeah.
yeah. In my face, not on my face.
Exactly, right.
All right. What's next?
Next, I have Traffic, that 90s drug drama. It was based on a British miniseries. Steven Soderbergh won the directing Oscar for it. And it has one of the most ludicrous performances of that decade. Catherine Zeta-Jones becomes like a ruthless killer slash drug lord. And it's just, it's so unintentionally funny that it just, to me, it wrecks
oh.
the whole movie.
Oh, okay. So you're laughing, but not... It's not a good thing.
Yeah,
I never saw that
crazy.
Movie either.
It's absolutely
it's
crazy,
stuck in it.
And it's also three. It's about 3 hours long. It's another one that you could lose, you know, an hour easily. But it
if
was
you're 3 hours.
Hit.
You better be Godfather like.
Damn straight.
It has to be Godfather. Yeah, or a historical
or
epic.
Or Goodfellas.
A
right.
lot of
hold
time.
My attention. Yep.
Or Goodfellas.
There's nothing I'd cut out of that Goodfellas movie.
No,
nothing.
I'd add to
not
it.
A
me
second.
Neither.
Yep, I'd add to it.
Me neither.
Let's talk to Joe in Norwalk. He has something on Avatar. Joe?
Hi, how's it going?
Hello.
Good. What do you got,
Hello, Joe?
Hey,
can
good
you morning.
Hear me?
No, yeah. I can't.
Yeah. Let's start answering your questions.
My son was a big Avatar lover, and he said it was such a great movie, so we sat and watched it, and
yeah.
all I could think of was Fern Gully. I was hoping that Robin Williams would fly in.
I loved Fern Gully. Oh, my God. That's the
You're
best.
Right. You're right.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank
All right.
you.
I'm glad we got
Thank
to that part.
Random thoughts. Joe from Norwalk. All right, Joe Myers, what do you think? What's number five on your list of the movies that critics got it most wrong?
It pains me to say it because I'm a big Bill Murray fan like Keith is, but Lost in Translation, I think, is kind of like watching grass grow. It's two people hanging out in the Hyatt Hotel in Tokyo. Scarlett Johansson is the other person, and it inexplicably won Sofia Coppola the best screenplay Oscar, you know, and it just, it has very little plot. I mean, it's watchable, I suppose. It's Bill Murray's only Oscar nomination, too, which is really weird. But I just, I've never been able to watch it a second time. I just think it's dull as dishwater.
No, that is one and done. When it did end, I remember looking over at Jennifer saying, that's it.
I want that time of my life back, yes.
Like, I didn't feel like I wasted the time, but I felt like there was no resolution. You know, the thing with Bill Murray is, unless it's a really bad movie, it's like being with your favorite uncle.
Yeah.
So it's really not that bad. Like, if anyone else was in that role, it would be stink fest.
Right. Just shut up halfway through. I'm not watching this no more.
It was neat seeing him in this role where he's not doing a setup, payoff.
Yeah, I like him in funny movies.
Yes.
You know?
Me too.
If I watch drama, watch the news.
Mm. So, all right, AJ has one.
The English Patient. The critics loved English Patient. The movie sucks.
Did you see it?
I saw part of it.
And that was enough for you.
It was enough for me. I think I watched like a half hour. I'm like, no.
That would be a funny review to write. I don't know what letters to use.
If I can spell it, no. Yeah. I know the no part. Yeah. I mean, it's so bad. It did not hold my attention. Everybody talked about it. Like, oh, you got to watch the English Page. I'm like, you know what? This sucks. Click. Life's too short.
That's the one that Seinfeld made a lot of fun of, where they were saying, like, die already.
Yeah, Elaine's in New York, like, just die already.
All right, so I'm guessing it's an English person who's a patient.
Yeah, something happened in the war and something like that.
Yeah,
he's
was
like,
burned badly.
That was it,
burned patient.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah.
Let me guess. He was very good looking. Then he was burned.
Ray Fiennes.
Yeah, and his personality comes through.
Right.
And it's this whole, almost like Beauty and the Beast. Like, there's a beautiful person inside.
Under the mummy band.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right.
Okay.
You got it.
Yeah.
You got it.
And does he die at the end and then everyone cries?
Yeah, I didn't get that far, did I?
We do. I actually liked it more than AJ, but lot of people felt, again, it was way too long, not enough story. You know, it was not a popular choice that year.
Yeah.
So what are we doing here while does it start out he's burnt, and then we're flashing back to his life before he was burnt?
You flash back to this great romance he had with Kristen Scott Thomas. You know, she's beautiful. They're running around in the Middle
surf,
East, I believe. And Juliette Binoche won the Oscar. She plays the nurse who treats him after he's been burned.
Yeah.
So is this one day in the life of this nurse and the patient, or is it?
No, it goes on. It covers quite a bit of time, and there is a good subplot about a guy who has to defuse these bombs that haven't exploded. Very suspenseful.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm
guessing at one point he wasn't able to defuse a bomb.
Right. He cut the wrong wire.
Is that what happened?
Cut the red wire instead of blue.
Is that
wire?
How he got burnt? Boom.
No. That's a totally different subplot. He gets burned when his plane crashes and catches on fire.
Actually, he was making a TV dinner and he dropped it and it all spilled on him.
Yeah. Oh, that's tough. I remember being on vacation and looking for a movie to watch. And when I'm assembling lists, I find all, you know, top movies, critics, Oscars, all this.
Yeah.
Box office, and you start running through and I'm like, I'm going to watch the trailer and I'm going to watch, you know, if that trailer pulls me in,
grabs you,
And I watched the trailer to that. I didn't even get through the trailer. I'm like, not for me.
Yeah.
Yep. You weren't in the minority on that.
No.
This is for people who watch those Anthony Hopkins movies where he's drinking tea out on a lawn somewhere.
No. This is for people.
Remains of the Day. Yes.
This is punishment for shoplifting in some countries. Watch the English Patient.
Yeah. Not for me.
Sorry, Joe. We agree to disagree.
That might be a funny segment. You two guys watch the same movie and review it.
Oh, my God. No, Joe would throw me out of the theater. Like, get the hell out of here.
He keeps sending me.
That's the Siskel and Ebert we want to see.
He keeps sending me for treats.
I would love that.
Got to find a movie Joe hasn't seen yet.
Fine. Let's do that.
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
Excellent.
Okay. We're gonna come up with one.
Yep.
Joe, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Right. Joe Myers is the host of a really awesome podcast called Now a Major Motion Picture. We're linked up on the radio station website.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.